Hey there, I'm so pumped to tell you about an amazing new community I've launched called Grief to Growth Circle Community. It's a space for people who are grieving to come together to support each other and for people who want to know who we are, why we're here, and where we're going to have those conversations, all the things we talk about on the podcast. So I invite you to join me at grieftogrowth.com/community to become part of this compassionate crew. The best part is 100% free. And you have access to me in addition to everybody else in the community. In fact, the podcast will be there so you can talk about the things we talk about in the podcast right there in the community. There's also some premium content if you want to go deeper in the work I'm doing, but mostly it's about building relationships and community and about sharing resources and supporting each other. So come on over and check it out. It's grieftogrowth.com/community. I'll see you inside.
Hi there. Welcome to the Grief to Growth podcast. Your host is Brian Smith, spiritual seeker, grief survivor, and life coach. Brian believes that the worst tragedies of life provide the greatest opportunity for growth. Brian says he was planted, not buried, and he's here to help you grow where you've been planted. In each episode, Brian and his guests will share what has helped them to survive and thrive. His sincere hope is that this episode helps you today.
And now, a brief word from our sponsor. When I decided I was going to do a podcast, I knew there were more moving parts than most people expect. How do you record a podcast? Where do you host it? How much will it cost? Do I need special software? How do I distribute it? All these questions were in my mind. I was all set to go with another podcast hosting company. Then I heard about Anchor. I believe that Anchor is the easiest way to make a podcast. Anchor gives you everything you need in one place. You can use it right from your phone or from your computer. Anchor is not only free, you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Anchor's creation tools allow you to record and edit your podcast so it sounds great. They'll even distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard everywhere, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many more. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's Anchor, ANCHOR.FM, as in FM radio. And now, back to our episode. Hey, everybody. Today's podcast is with my friend Joanna Bartlett. I met Joanna in a group I'm in it's called Master Heart with a coach named George Cow. And we work on trying to make our businesses more authentic and obviously successful. But Joanna is an advanced grief recovery specialist, and I was talking with her about the work that I do and the work that she does, and I think there's a good synergy between what we both do. So in today's episode, we talk about what she does, and she's also a former professional medium. She doesn't practice mediumship anymore, but she does teach it, which I think gives her an interesting perspective as well. So I hope you enjoy the episode. Hey everybody, this is Brian with another episode of Grief to Growth, and today I have with me my friend Joanna Bartlett. Joanna and I met through a group with our coach, George Cow, the Master Heart group, and I want to introduce Joanna to you and talk about what she does, and I think it'll be a very interesting episode. From an early age, Reverend Joanna Bartlett experienced a remarkable amount of loss, the death of a sibling, her parents' divorce, moving to a new country twice, sexual abuse and assault, parental neglect, the death of several pets and grandparents, and a loss of health. This was all before she became an adult. As a young adult, she found solace and support in a spiritualist church where she went on to become a certified medium and minister. Her work as a medium brought her back around to helping others deal with their own losses and grief, resulting in her training as an advanced grief recovery specialist with the Grief Recovery Institute, which we'll talk about today. These days, in addition to helping others learn to develop their own mediumship abilities, she teaches people the tools they need to heal to perform from the painful incompleteness of grief. So with that, I want to introduce my friend Joanna Bartlett.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hey, Joanna, it's good to have you on.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what you're doing now, and then we'll kind of maybe backtrack and talk about how you got to where you are.
Okay.
So let's talk about you're doing grief work today mainly. Mm-hmm. And that's right. Tell me about that.
So I'm an advanced grief recovery specialist. It sounds fancy, but essentially what it means is I help people figure out what is painful and incomplete for them with losses that they've experienced. Many of these losses are relationships, whether it's death, a divorce, or estrangement, or just like difficult relationships with parents or children or kind of anybody in your life, ex-husbands, ex-spouses. So, and figure out, yeah, what's painful about that, what they're still holding on to, what they're still carrying around with them that keeps them from living a healthy, happy life. And I teach them new tools to be able to move through that pain and essentially let go of the painful parts so mm-hmm. they don't have to carry them anymore.
And the way you teach, it's a particular method. Tell me about the method that you use.
Yeah, so I use the grief recovery method, which was developed by John James, who's now one of the founders of the Grief Recovery Institute. And he developed this method after losing a child to death. One of his child died, and he was understandably deep in grief and trying to find ways to heal that grief or to move through it and to not have it affect him kind of so much. And he read all the books that were available at the time on grief and did a bunch of different programs. And somehow, I think intuitively, is my own personal opinion, came up with this grief recovery method to move through the painful parts and to be able to let go of them so that they just don't hurt as much anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it is. It's a very specific, systematic process. Where the way I work with it is an 8-week process, and we've got the grief recovery handbook is the textbook, and you have homework every week, and we talk about it in the sessions and reflect upon it and your own experiences and the losses you've experienced, and that's kind of the first part of the process. And then the second part of the process, I help clients look at one particularly painful relationship, one loss that is really affecting them and impacting their life and their capacity for happiness at the moment, and teach them how to look at the wholeness of that relationship, the highs and lows, the ups and downs, and figure out kind of what's incomplete in that, what needs to be expressed or said or emotionally worked through. And I help them do that. And essentially, you know, what it boils down to is figuring out, you know, because every relationship has its highs and lows, its ups and downs, its things that basically you wish had been different, better, or more in the relationship. The things that you wish you had said or done differently, maybe the things that you wish you hadn't said or done, or the other person had done differently in some way. And so you figure out the things that are on you, the things that you wish you had acted in ways that you wish you had acted differently, the things that you had said differently or done differently or had been better in some way, and you apologize for those things. Essentially, you issue an apology, not to the person. This is all done with a grief recovery specialist, so it's all confidential and safe. And then you figure out the things that you need to forgive the other person for, that you wish that they had done differently in some way or better, or, you know, the things that were on them in the relationship that are still painful for you, and you issue forgiveness for those things. You decide to forgive through this process. And then the others is like just the things that you wish you had said, the things that you wish you had communicated, the things that you felt were never heard, perhaps, if you did try to communicate them. And this process allows you to communicate those things. And in a way, it seems very, very simple. It seems way too simple to be as effective as it is. But it allows your heart to do the emotional processing work that it hasn't been able to do before. Because we very often try to think our way through grief, and we often get stuck in our minds, and we ruminate, we go through this, oh, if only I had said this, if only if I had done this, if only whatever it is, or if only that person hadn't done that. And we get stuck in that place. And this process allows you to your heart center, your heart to do that emotional processing and to really let go of what's painful.
Wow. Wow. So you and I were talking the other day, and we were talking about the method that you use. And when I think of grief, I think of the loss of a person, but you talked about grief as being the people you work with. It could be something other than the loss of a person.
Yes. So this one of the things I like about a lot about the grief recovery method is it can be applicable to many areas of your life. So like for me, like you said in my intro, I've lost countries. It sounds kind of silly. I've lost my homeland of England. I left when I was 10. I've been back, I think, like four times in my life, maybe five. And that's actually always been a really painful loss to me. Mm-hmm. And so you can even use this method for something like that, but you can use it also for, say, a divorce. I have two ex-husbands. And so those are two painful, you know, relationships. Often relationships with ex-spouses are painful because there's a loss, all the losses that come with divorce, the, you know, the hopes and dreams and expectations you had for that relationship, once that relationship ends, those die, essentially. And it can be hard and painful, mm-hmm. or even a relationship with someone who is still living. So like my relationship with my dad was never what I wanted it to be, and he's still alive, and there's been a lot of pain for me around that. And so this has helped me move through that and heal from that, essentially. And it's not painful in the way that it has been my whole life, which is nice. Mm. And you know, people often, and this was developed initially to help deal with grief or the pain of grief from losing a loved one to physical death. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it can be applied in a bunch of other ways as well.
Yeah, I was talking with someone just a couple of days ago, and she's moving out of her house and has had mm-hmm. a couple other losses, you know, big losses recently in her life. And she asked the question, is it possible to grieve the loss of the house?
Yeah, it is. It's a real loss. I mean, so the definition of grief that I work with, that the Grief Recovery Institute teaches and uses, is that grief is the conflicting feelings that you very naturally and normally have when any familiar pattern of behavior changes or ends. And that applies to very much in our life. And that definitely doesn't minimize the grief that people experience when a loved one dies, especially, I know you deal a lot with parents whose children have died. And so it doesn't, you know, it's expanding the definition doesn't minimize anybody's pain right. or experience.
Right.
I find it to be a very valid and helpful definition, because when you move, it can be a huge loss depending on your experience, right? And your circumstances.
Right.
It's a familiar pattern of behavior, the place that you live, the place that you sleep, the place that you're in every day, it changes or ends. And you have a bunch of feelings about it. And those feelings can be grief.
Yeah. So yeah, it was interesting talking about that and kind of expanding that definition of grief, as you said, for someone who has lost someone like a child or a parent or a spouse or something like that. I mean, we of course think of that as grief, but it's fascinating to know that this technique can work on other types of losses. And mm-hmm. first of all, just to validate that that is a true loss, you know, losing a spouse to a divorce, losing a job or losing a house. So, I know you're also were medium, before you started getting into this work. So how did you become a medium?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey there, something I want to tell you about today. My podcast platform, Buzzsprout, has recently made it easier for me to allow you to support me financially. Go to www.grieftogrowth.com/subscribe. That's grief2growth.com/subscribe. And once you're there, you can sign up to support me financially. Now, you can do it for as little as $3 a month or, of course, as much as you'd like. If you do that, you'll get access to bonus episodes, and you'll see those in the regular feed. They'll have a lock on them. But when you become a subscriber, you'll actually get access to your own private feed, and you'll be able to listen to the regular podcast along with the bonus podcast for the subscribers. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for sharing the podcast. And I want to thank those of you who support me financially. Have a great day, and on to the episode.
How did I become a medium? It's a good question. And so I answered that in one of my books a little bit. But so I, in retrospect, you know how, you know, hindsight's 20/20,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So after I became a medium, I started studying mediumship formally in my early 20s when I went to a spiritualist church in Rochester, New York, Plymouth Spiritualist Church. It's called the Mother Church of Modern Spiritualism, that I kind of happened upon. and realized then that, oh, these experiences I've been having for so many years, this is what's going on. This is what's, you know, this is what's like wrong with me, or, you know, there's something wrong with me. This is what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so looking back, I remember seeing what I at the time I think called ghosts in my house when I was a young child. And I now realize that at least one of those people was my brother, who died when I was two, coming to, you know, say hello and check on us and all of that. And I was resolutely shut down. There's no such thing as ghosts, Joanna. And but it was something that I kind of continued to experience, and being very sensitive to other people's emotions and my own intuition kind of throughout my life. And then, yeah, when I was in my 20s, I started studying mediumship and became a certified medium with the National Spiritualist Association of Churches.
You know, it's interesting, as I was reading your intro, and I didn't realize you had been through as much trauma as you'd been through. I've heard, and you can tell me whether you've heard this or not, or whether you feel it's true, that a lot of times mediums come out of traumatic childhoods, and it seems to be common with a lot of mediums I know anyway. Do you know, has that been your experience, and why do you think that is?
My experience has been a lot of sensitives, I guess I would call them, have had difficult childhood experiences. And I think it has been having, you know, a difficult childhood is a kind of inadvertent training ground for developing your abilities, especially your abilities to like take the emotional temperature of a room to figure out who's safe or not safe, because things are happening to you as a kid that are out of your control. And so you learn to, kids are tend to be very open and aware, because they haven't, like, kids are very open to their intuition. We're naturally born with these, this capacity to understand the world around us in more ways than modern society, you know, approves of. And we so you tend to learn to use those things when you are in those kinds of situations. So people who are, say, empathic and very sensitive in that way tend to try and feel out people, what's safe, what's not safe, how do I, can I be in this situation, can I go into this room, or are people going to start yelling at me or hurt me or, you know, be not good for me in some way. And I don't know, that's kind of my take on it. It's almost like a survival or a coping mechanism, that you develop these abilities to survive those experiences.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And you know, it's interesting, as you were saying that, you said, and I've heard people say, we're all kind of a born, I think we're born more open than we end up being. So maybe it's that people that are in that environment, they don't shut those things down. They just, maybe it's because you leave them open because you have to.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting. You were talking about also seeing your brother in spirit when you were younger. I was just reading PMH Atwater's book just last night, and reading one of the cases where this little girl, I think when she was around two or so, was seeing a brother who had been miscarried, so he hadn't been born, and seeing a brother who had not been born yet. So he was born later, and her, she was walking around the house looking for her brothers, and I guess driving her parents crazy, like, where are my brothers? And they're like, you know, you don't have any brothers. One hadn't been born yet, and one was never born.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'm... Yeah, kids can be really awesome in that way. After my mom died, my older son, during bath time, he was six, I think, when she died, and he used to tell me for the next kind of few years afterwards, at bath time, he would see her. He would see her and our cat, who also died that year, a few months after my mom, and he would tell me, oh, Nanny's hugging you right now. Hobbs is here right now. And it was really sweet that he would, you know, he would see them or sense them.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So you've gone from being a medium into doing grief work. And I know you're still right about mediumship. You still teach mediumship. But it's interesting, you know, that your work is, you know, very related, but you don't bring your mediumship currently into your grief work. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So the grief recovery method really wants you to just, you know, do the grief recovery method. I mean, I know and I can sense when people are doing this work, especially at the end when you share this final, you know, thing that you, this letter essentially that you put together. I can tell that there are loved ones in there. But it's actually mediumship is what brought me to grief recovery work. Oh, excuse me, my allergies are terrible at the moment. My eyes are tearing up. But yeah, because I was doing mediumship work and essentially fell into the role of a grief counselor, almost a grief support, grief coach, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
When I had clients, for some clients, having a mediumship reading was the healing that they needed to know that their loved one was okay, that they were still communicating, that they had, you know, moved on and their life, you know, their existence continued, and that helped, and they could resolve, they could apologize for the things that were like, I'm so sorry this happened, or the loved one in spirit could say, I'm so sorry this happened, and they would have that emotional healing. And then I had clients who needed more than that, that you know, they kind of kept coming back for more. I'm like, I need more skills to help people, because we're just not taught the tools to help people who are grieving. And even in my pastoral training, which was helpful and it was good and it was compassionate, at least. So at least I don't think I was kind of saying the wrong things for the most part, but I wanted to say, you know, the right and more helpful things. And so that's what led me to learn about the grief recovery method and then become a trained grief recovery specialist. And so I don't do mediumship readings anymore. Mm-hmm. For a bunch of reasons, but one of them is that I really love teaching people the tools so that they can have the tools and do the work themselves rather than needing me. It's great that I love, you know, I like making myself redundant, I suppose, but, you know, teach people the tools themselves, which is great.
So that brings up the question that I always talk to people about as far as developing mediumship abilities, because I've heard, you know, several mediums say that we could all do this. But you know, as I said, you know, we don't have the background that you have. Not all of us have seen spirit as a child, mm-hmm. you know, as you did. So what would you say to people about how to develop their mediumship abilities? Or in my case, as we were talking about earlier, I have a lot of people, they don't want to become professional mediums. They want to connect with their kids.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, certainly not everybody who even develops mediumship abilities and could even connect with other people's loved ones necessarily needs to become a professional medium. I mean, you can just do it for yourself and for your friends and family. So my thought, my understanding and belief is that mediumship is, or even kind of intuitive abilities, or that the ability to connect with something larger than your physical self. It's very similar to, say, singing ability or any kind of like artistic ability. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everybody can sing to some extent. There's some people that like really aren't awesome, but, or who are tone deaf or who just, you know, don't have much vocal range. And pretty much, but anybody just about can probably improve with some training and some help in that and coaching or whatever in practice. Some people are naturally awesome singers, right? They just open their mouth and like this amazingness comes out and the rest of us go, how is this even possible? Wish I could do that.
Right.
And I think the same can be true for mediumship. Some people just have that connection and kind of keep it open. But even for me, I mean, I've received a lot of training in mediumship in order to be able to know what I'm doing and to do it safely and to do it, you know, to do it well. And so there's a whole kind of range of ability. And so one of the things I have done, and I'm trying to do more actually, is help people develop, that ability to communicate with their own loved ones, mm-hmm. right? You don't need to do it for the public or even, you know, for everybody else, but just to do it for yourself, to kind of have that connection with your loved ones and to know and understand when you are getting messages from them.
Yeah,
because I think that can be a really lovely and beautiful thing. So I did develop a journal. It's called Signs from Spirit Journal to help you notice these experiences and journal about them. And then I have an online course as well, which is also called Signs from Spirit. And the idea being to help people get that of like, well, what are these different signs that I might be getting or messages I might be getting from my loved ones in spirit? And to validate it, right? To validate it and encourage them to actually believe, at least begin to believe, that it could possibly be their loved one who is sending these signs. Because they really do. I think they really do check in with us and let us know that they're there.
So I'm going to make sure everybody understands. That was Signs from Spirit, and it's by Reverend Joanna Bartlett.
Okay. I'll hold the book up for the...
So yeah, so that's a journal and a book, and then you said you've also got an online course for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yes.
Great. Yeah. So that's a question I get a lot from parents is, how do I develop my abilities? And it's something I probably need to spend more time on, because I haven't spent a lot of time, actually trying to formally do that. So I might check that out.
Yeah, a lot of it is really about getting quiet first. I think if you can move through your grief, it helps. When you're not heavy in grief and still in that pain of wishing things had been, different, better, or more in some way, and you've resolved some of that and let some of that heaviness go, it allows you to be able to connect more easily. And so the second part of then would be getting quiet, allowing yourself the quiet and the space so that you can hear that your own inner voice and intuition and your own, to connect with spirit and your loved ones in spirit. And then it's noticing what comes up in your life and not just immediately dismissing it as coincidence, being willing to believe that maybe it is. So one of the ways that my mom communicates with me or lets me know sometimes that she still cares is she sends me money, which is lovely. I mean, I'm totally into that. Yeah. So I would, right after she died, I kept getting these refund checks in the mail from various things, from her homeowner's insurance and from, credit card interest and different things. And they will still come up sometimes. I will get these checks and I know it's my mom saying hello to me.
That's interesting. That's not a sign I'd heard before.
Yeah, I know. I'm I'm totally into it. I'm send me some more refund checks, mom. That's great. Thanks. But yeah, there's, all the common ones like feathers and coins and various animals, birds, songs on the radio, license plates, billboard signs, even seeing headlines in articles or, things like that. I get those kinds of things kind of pretty often in various forms.
Yeah, it's amazing how varied the signs are. And it seems like some people on the other side specialize in certain types of signs versus other types of signs. Yeah. And I talk to a lot of people that will say, why didn't get this type of sign? I'm not getting feathers, or I'm not. The big one is dream visits. Everybody wants dream visits. What would you say to people that aren't getting dream visits?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi there, I'm really excited to tell you about my latest ebook. It's 4 lessons that you can learn from the near-death experience without going through all the trouble of dying to learn them. I've been studying NDEs for several years now. I am completely convinced that not only are they 100% real, but that there's some very universal wisdom that we can get from the near-death experience. And I've distilled that down in this book into 4 short lessons. And I've also given you all the reasons why I believe the NDEs are absolutely real. So go to www.grieftogrowth.com/NDE lessons to pick it up for free. www.grief2growth.com/NDE lessons. I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, dream visits are... Sometimes dream visits can be a little bit tricky, I find, in the sense that, how do you know if it's really a dream or if it's a visitation, or, part of me goes, well, does it really matter? That's part of what I teach people is, does it really matter? If it brings you solace, if it brings you joy, if it brings you comfort, it's okay, right? It's okay if it, feel that warmth and feel that connection.
Yeah.
Because, when one of the ways that we connect with spirit is through that energy of love.
Right.
And on that wavelength, the wavelength of love, that whenever I think of somebody that I love who is in spirit, with love in my heart, I know they feel it, and I know that's a real connection. It is something that love does not die, and it is real, and it is tangible almost. And then dreams are kind of tricky in the sense that not all of us remember our dreams.
Right.
So you could be you know, it sounds kind of sad, I suppose. You could be having a dream visit and not like remember it in the morning, but it's still happening, and that connection on some level, you're still experiencing it. I know I've certainly had dreams where I wake up in the morning and it felt like, oh my God, I've been like traveling all night or walking all night or something, but I don't remember the specifics of it. You know, I know I've had dreams about loved ones, like my mom specifically, which have not been pleasant dreams, where I've been like yelling at her all night because this is before I did my own grief recovery work with her, where because I've been trying to work stuff out with her, and I wake up and I'm like, oh no, I had an argument with my mom in my dreams. That's not what I want. And then I've had other dreams with her, like it was her birthday in September, and that night, the night before, I actually had a dream about her. I don't remember what happened in the dream. All I remember is that she was trying to help me. Mm-hmm. Whatever was going on in the dream, she was trying to help me. And that was, you know, that was my mom there with me.
Yeah. 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 I've heard people say that we actually visit, we travel every night. We meet with our guides, we meet with our loved ones, whatever. But most of those things we're not allowed to remember, or we don't remember, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah.
I'm like you, I'll wake up sometimes with the feeling that something happened that I can't quite remember. And I feel like maybe I met with my guides, but I don't remember, I don't remember the details of it.
Mm-hmm.
So people might be, you know, meeting with their loved ones and for whatever reason, we can't remember it in the morning. But what I try to tell people is remain open to whatever signs you're getting. Yeah. And to be open to, you know, lots of different things, like you said, even, you know, maybe getting a refund. I've talked to people, their loved ones, I don't know why they do this, they break things, especially electronics. It's like, or, you know, lights flickering on and off and things of that nature. So we have to be, you know, on the lookout for all those things.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many things. Like I was going to look at my list. What list did I come up with? It's in here somewhere. Yeah. So feathers, cloud shapes, even seeing kind of certain shapes in the clouds, coins, animals, songs or music, license plates, flowers. Like one of the things that my mom will show up at is with a rose and the scent of a rose. She loved roses. Mm-hmm. It's her favorite flower. And so I have like roses in my, a lot of roses in my garden, like just happened to be there. Well, it's not because of my mom. And so I don't always notice them. You know, like I see them all the time every day. And then someday suddenly I'll get the strong rose scent just like kind of out of the blue. And it's like, well, where's, you know, why now? Why today? Why, you know, it's clearly not just an everyday kind of occurrence. Phone calls. Sometimes people's phones will ring, like their cell phone will ring, and it will either be like no number or the person's number, even though the cell phone has been disconnected. Repeated numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Books sometimes that fall out off the shelf. I don't know if you've ever had that happen. It's like you got little like mischievous people in spirit that they like knock things off surfaces or they try to get your attention in some way. Yeah, lights flickering. Mm-hmm. I've had the client whose dad kept turning on the TV in the middle of the night and it would like scare her because she's like, why is the TV on?
Yeah.
That, some people seem to like playing with electricity. They're really good at electricity. Like that seems to be their element almost.
Mm-hmm.
Smells, even sometimes people will show up with a scent. Like one of my students, her dad will show up with a scent of tobacco because he was a smoker, and so that's how she knows he's around, because she gets a strong like smell of tobacco. So you know, there's lots of different ways that people communicate, our loved ones in spirit communicate, and you have to just be open to, I know what those might be, and be willing and be willing to kind of suspend disbelief and to see, just acknowledge it and go, thanks, Dad. Thanks. You know, whoever.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because as we were talking about this in the different signs, and I was thinking about, I've seen people, they'll get a sign and they'll run to their group of friends and they'll say, this happened. Was it a sign?
Mm.
And I've even had some medium friends say, don't share your signs with anybody because you don't want people taking it away from you. Mm-hmm. If you're in the right group, then people will be encouraging. But I've seen people say, oh no, that wasn't a sign. That was just a coincidence, or this happened because of this. So what I'd say to people is, you know, trust. If you feel it was a sign, it was a sign.
Yep. Yeah, that's exactly what I would say too, is trust yourself. Trust that first, you know, initial intuition that you get.
Right.
Like if you get a sign and you think of a loved one, it's because that connection is real and it's there. You're not making it up, because how many other times throughout your day do you see that kind of thing, or that kind of thing happens and you have no reaction?
Right.
You don't make that connection. You're making the connection because it's a real connection. It's not just your imagination.
Yeah.
And you really have to learn to trust that initial impulse. And yeah, so sharing it, like you said, it depends on your group of friends. If you have a group of friends who are like totally supportive and not, you know, horribly skeptical, and, you know, will provide validation and be like, oh, that's wonderful, that's wonderful. You know, they said hello to you. But otherwise, yeah, no, it's yours. It's for you. It's a message from a sign for you, for your own heart, not for...
Well, I think everyone. The other thing a lot of people don't realize, and this freaks people out, is people in spirit can put thoughts in our head. So a lot of the times, thoughts that we think are ours, they're not ours. So if you get that sign and you get that thought, the thought could be coming from the person who's trying to get your attention.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so that's just something that for people to keep open. So, you know, when I was talking the other day, it was really the reason I really wanted to have you on is because a lot of people, I think especially parents, when their children pass, we feel guilt, whether we had anything to do with their passing or not. I mean, it could be an accident that happened, you know, 100 or 1,000 miles away. It could be something that's congenital. We'll take that blame on ourselves. So the impression I get, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is your method helps people to get through that stuff. Because I see people stuck in that. So when we talk to them and helping parents heal, we say, learn to connect with your child and all this stuff. They're like, they're still stuck in, I'm feeling guilt. I'm feeling, you know, guilt is the biggest thing I would say.
Yeah. No, and it makes sense that parents feel that way. Because, you know, you become a parent and... oh gosh, you suddenly feel responsible for absolutely everything. Yeah. Even if it's not in your control, right? Even if it's not anything that you could have done, possibly done anything about. And it just, it's like, well, it's my kid, so it's mine. And it's really, you know, that seems totally normal and natural to feel that way. And yeah, so the grief recovery method helps you resolve that, I suppose, to, you know, to figure out what that is. The Grief Recovery Institute has a kind of a specific definition of guilt that they use.
No, really? Which
is, guilt is the intent to harm.
Hmm.
If you didn't have any intent to harm, which in pretty much, you know, most of the cases with parents whose children have, you know, died a physical death, there's no intent to harm. You know, so that guilt is not, sometimes it's regret or it's, you know, but it's not really guilt in that sense. So that's the first thing we do, is we kind of address that and think about that and go, is this really, are you really guilty of anything? Right. Did you intend to harm your child? It's like, well, no, of course you didn't. So. Right. Maybe it's not, maybe guilt isn't quite the right label for what you're, the very valid and legitimate feelings that you're having, right? Feelings valid, whatever they are. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's not quite the right label. And so what is it? What is really going on here? It's that you wish that things have been different. It's that you wish you could have done more. It's that you wish things could have been better in some way. And so what are those things? And so kind of by untangling that overwhelming feeling or those overwhelming feelings and figuring out what's really going on, getting that awareness, then you can actually move through them and let go of that feeling of guilt, so that you feel you don't have that hugely painful kind of emotional incompleteness in terms of the relationship, in terms of the way that your child died, or that even the things that happened, you know, in their life and your relationship with them while they were alive, so that, like we talked about earlier, you can continue to have a loving, you know, good relationship with them now, as they are, you know, in spirit and still in your heart, and without all that heaviness, without all that emotional heaviness and tangled up feelings and all the stuff that prevents you perhaps from connecting in with them, mm-hmm. and being able to get those signs and notice those signs, or even just to, you know, to have fond memories without them becoming painful memories, so yeah. that you can, you know, you can have the joy of them.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel despondent after a loved one died because it's like, okay, it's too late. I can't fix it. This is the way it was left. This is the way it will always be. And they feel like there's no way I can let go of this, you know? Yeah. And so when, as you said, when they think of that person, instead of thinking a joyful thought and thinking about all the great times they had together and the great life they had together, they think about the very end or the last thing they said to them or the last thing they didn't say to them.
Yeah, it's those regrets, the things that they wish had been different in some way, the wish they could have been better. And it's really normal and natural to get hung up on that stuff because it's incomplete and because you're trying to resolve it. So one of my theories, one of my beliefs is that we are all moving towards healing, always. We're all trying to move towards healing. Mm-hmm. We do it in weird and messy ways and ways that don't really work sometimes. But that's what our inner impetus is. That's what we're trying to do is we're trying to heal.
Yeah.
And so when we get stuck in those thought patterns and that if only this, I can't believe I said that, I should have, whatever, it's because we're trying to work through what is painful. Still, what's unresolved and incomplete and painful for us. That's what we're trying to do, and we just don't have the right tools to do it, unfortunately. Hmm. And so that's what the grief recovery method teaches, is the tools that are actually effective and helpful in resolving that stuff so that you don't have to be there anymore, so that you can have some peace and some lightness and they're not carrying around that pain.
I like that. That's a great way of looking at it, because I'm thinking of it like we're our own worst enemy sometimes. It's like we're sabotaging ourselves. And when I will tell people, you know, because I hear people just beating themselves up, and I'm like, okay, what would you say if a friend said that to you, right? Say to yourself what you would say to your best friend. I think we all do the best we can with what we know at the time. Yeah. And I've seen people, again, you know, I wish I hadn't let her go out that night, or I wish I had gone with them, or, you know, I should have been there, you know, whatever. It's just stuff. And it's like, you're not a superhuman being. You can't be everywhere all the time. And even if you are, we can't protect your children even when they're there. In my case, my daughter, you know, she had been away for a week before she passed. And I was, of course, worried about her because she was in, you know, she was in Florida. She was away. She'd flown back home and she was here, and she passed in her own bed right down the hall from me. Yes. So it just goes to show that we don't have control of as much as we think we do. And we have to allow ourselves to be human.
Yeah, we don't have control of as much as we would like to. We would like to be able to control it all. And yeah, we're human and we're fallible. And like you said, we do the best we can in each moment. And that best may not be our absolute personal best every single moment, of course, because we're human beings. But it's the best that we were able to manage right then. And of course, if you had known, right, you could and would have done things differently, perhaps. And maybe it may or may not have changed, you know, an outcome. And you can't know that. And it's really hard. And it's,
yeah, you know, it is. But it's really, I think you just have to let go of those things. I mean, I went through some personal things myself with Shannon because she had some health issues. And you know, we took her to the best doctors we could find to take her to, and we did what they said. Plus, you know, so I did all those things, but I'm like, you know, what if I had done this, or if I hadn't done this? So I think it's a very natural thing to do, but it's not a very productive thing to do. Yeah. And if we can learn techniques to let go of that and to give ourselves some grace, I think allows us to go on to, you know, to continue that relationship. And that's what I try to talk to people about, is that continuing relationship, because a lot of times in our society, people think once they're gone, you know, I'll never see them again, or I'll see them in the by and by maybe, you know, but to know that they're still around, that they're still active in our lives, I think for me, that's a key of being able to handle what I'm going through.
Yeah. I mean, the grief recovery method doesn't require anybody to have any specific belief about the afterlife or, you know, whether we can continue to connect with our loved ones in spirit. That's my beliefs personally. As you know, as a medium, I believe we can continue to connect with our loved ones. And it's a hard place to be, to, Yeah, to not know, to wish things could have been different and to not know, but to learn new tools, because we're just not taught them. Our society just doesn't teach us how to deal with our own losses and, you know, the pain from loss and from grief. And it doesn't teach us how to help other people who are going through grief either, which is why people will often say, you know, really useless things to try to be helpful, but it's often very painful what they say. Especially, I can only imagine around, you know, the loss of a child, the things that people would say to, that may be intellectually true, to kind of like try and be helpful and help you feel better, but like, oh, really just don't do it. And yeah.
Well, and even oftentimes, because I've dealt with a couple of people who are going through this, you know, so we've got the loss to begin with, and then you have people that just like say the wrong things or just don't say anything at all. They go away. They're no longer part of your life. And then you feel like you're toxic and you feel like you're alone. So I think it's helpful for people in those circumstances to, you know, to reach out to someone that can help them to deal with those feelings. You know, that's when grief becomes even more difficult and complicated.
Yeah. And it's not your fault, right? If the people around you go away or they just don't bring it up or they'll stop saying your loved one's name and never bring them up. And that can be so painful because you may want to keep their memory alive. You might want to talk about them or talk about them, you know, especially on like that birthday or those kind of anniversary dates that it can be really painful, or even just every day, because you don't, it's not like you stop thinking, especially if it's your child who has died. You haven't stopped thinking about your child. You haven't stopped being a parent to your child. You're always going to be a parent to them. They're always going to be one of your kids. But people don't know. It's. I think it's because people don't know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
So they sometimes will either say something hurtful or they won't say anything at all. And they will just kind of disappear from your life. And it's because we don't know how to deal with grief. And it's also because pretty much everybody is carrying around unhealed grief. And when the thing about grief is cumulative and it's cumulatively negative. So every loss that you have that is still unresolved, every new loss reverberates through the old loss as well. Wow. It resonates. It's like when you have two instruments in a room that are tuned and you hit a G string on one, it will make that G string on the other instrument also vibrate.
Right.
It's the same thing with grief. And so when a loss occurs and grief occurs, it vibrates all those prior griefs that are still painful for you. And so it does that for you internally, and it also does that for the people around you. Your loss also vibrates their own grief within them, and it brings it up for them, and they don't know how to deal with their own grief either. And so they're like, okay, I'm out of here. I don't know how to deal with this. I'm extremely emotionally uncomfortable at the moment, so I'm going to change the subject, or I'm not going to talk to you, or I'm going to say something useless.
That's a really good point. I never thought of that before, but you made a lot of good points there, but you know, you're right. I think a lot of us, or most of us, are carrying around unresolved grief, and maybe that's what makes us so uncomfortable around people that are grieving. And it reminds me, right after my daughter passed, there was someone in my life who had never seen express, you know, grief before. And it triggered someone who had died. I don't want to identify this person, but it triggered someone who had died like years before. And this person just kind of broke down talking about that. I had no idea they were still dealing with that. So I think that loss of someone else can trigger that. And then, like you said, so if that gets triggered in a person because they're with you and you're dealing with your grief, then they want to go away because they don't want to deal with that. They don't want to deal with that pain. So, And I do see a lot of people that just say, I just don't want to deal with it. And I my thing is, because I did that when my grandmother died, I suppressed my grief and I just said, well, you know, she was old, it was her time to go. And I just said, I'm not going to deal with it. It was 3 years later that it hit me and I didn't realize I was still carrying it around.
Yeah. We have an amazing capacity to carry around unresolved pain. And not realize it, perhaps. We're good at suppressing it. We're good at, like, you know, shoving it down, packing it down under the surface, or distracting ourselves with work or alcohol or something.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're not taught tools. We don't know how. I mean, it seems kind of like when you go, oh, yeah, we're just not given the tools to move through this in an effective way. Of course, we don't. We flail about, and we either like avoid it or suppress it or try and ignore it. You know, of course, well, what else are we going to do? We don't know what to do with it. You got to try something.
Well, it's good to know that people, you know, like yourself, are out there, and this method is there. That's, as you said, a pretty straightforward 8-session method. So it's not necessarily an open-ended thing, because I think a lot of times people are going like. And I was just, someone just said this the other day, and then like the next day I heard this on a television program. They're like, if I deal with my grief, will it ever end? Will I ever be able to get out of it? And then I heard a character on a television program who was stuffing his grief and running away with it. And they were just, the other characters were encouraging him to express it. He said, I'm scared if I start, I'll never, you know, there'll never be a bottom. There'll never be an end. And I think, I personally think we have to face it. And we have to just, it's work. It's not pleasant. It's not easy. It takes a lot of energy, but it's better. I think it's like rip the Band-Aid off, right? Just go at it head on.
Yeah. The only way through it is through it. It's one of those things, and it's not the answer anybody wants to hear. Right. But it is what it is. And I think we know this on some kind of fundamental internal level. I think we know it. And the thing, like you said, it takes a lot of energy. It also takes a lot of energy to not deal with it.
Absolutely.
It takes a lot of emotional energy to carry around unresolved grief. It is exhausting. Because after I started doing this work, what happened is I got a copy of the Grief Recovery Handbook to help my clients. I started reading it and I went, oh, I need to do this work myself. This is for me. Yeah. I better, you know, this is the work I need to do. And these are the tools that I've always needed to do it. And so I started doing this, and I've worked through, I think, 21 different losses at this point. I'm like totally into this work. Oh, wow. But even after doing, say, the first like 4 or 5, I felt so much lighter emotionally and had so much more energy because I didn't have to carry around the weight of all that grief anymore and all that unresolved loss and that pain, which I was very busy, you know, trying to suppress or trying to, like, you know, not have to deal with constantly. But it's always there. That pain is still there, even though it seems like it would be really painful to talk openly about grief and, you know, do this work. That pain, you're carrying it around with you already.
Well, and then there's all the coping mechanisms that people come up with. I mean, you mentioned some earlier, you know, overworking, you know, alcohol. I see people, they try to avoid all the triggers. So it's like, I can't listen to music. I can't go to this part of town. I can't go to this town at all. I can't watch a football game. You know, on and on and on of things. Mm-hmm. So people are setting up their lives to avoid, you know, all the triggers. Because they just can't bear to think about, you know, that person or that thing that they've lost.
Yeah.
As you said, you know, if you can work through those things that make that feel bad, then when you think about that person, you can actually feel good.
Yeah. You can remember the fond memories and you can feel that love and that connection with that person through that love energy. So it's a bit like physical therapy, right? Physical therapy is like, who wants to go to physical therapy? Like, that's not like fun, but we go do it and we do the exercises, we do the homework so that we can have, you know, the benefit of that and not, you know, and not have to deal with that painful issue that we were having anymore, hopefully. And, you know, the same is true with the grief recovery that, you know, through in those 8 weeks, you learn the tools to complete the pain, and you will complete the pain around one relationship, and you learn the tools to basically use it in any other relationship with your life. And I continue to provide support to people if they want it, if they want to say, okay, I want to work on more relationships now. You know, I have more grief I need to process. I'll continue to support and help people, or they can do it on their own, or I give people kind of a bunch of options. But it's a really worthwhile thing to, you know, to learn these new tools and new ways of looking at grief and looking at where you learned these things and your responses to grief and the ways that you try to avoid this pain, like you said, whether it's, overworking, you know, keeping busy, fantasy, whether that's like, you know, TV or films or Facebook or, you know, video games, scrolling through social media, playing Candy Crush for hours, you know, whatever it is that you happen to do, Food is a big one. Retail therapy, as people call it, shopping too much. There's like all kinds of things. The isolation. Sometimes people will just isolate from other people as a way to just be like, I'm just going to be in my little bubble, which doesn't seem particularly pleasant, really, because humans need interaction and communication and connection with others. So,
well, I think it's good for people just to know that you can, I would say, deal with the grief. I don't think you get over grief. I don't think it goes away. I don't think you ever finish and close the book on it. As long as you love that person, you're gonna have longing for them. But you can learn to deal with it. You can learn to get rid of some of those bad parts of it. You can learn to get rid of the guilt and the regret and stuff like that. That stuff can go away, and then you know you're still gonna have the longing, and that's okay. I think that's actually a good thing to want to be with that person. That shows that you still have the love, and the love is still there.
Yeah. I mean, you could, like, I still miss my mom. I'm always going to miss my mom.
Yeah.
And you know, even as a medium, and I, even though I know whenever I talk about her and think about her, I feel her, I see, you know, I don't see her, but I feel her. I know that she is with me and that she loves me. And gosh, yeah, I still wish she was here in physical form. Of course I do. I'm human, you know, so you're still, even if you do the grief recovery method, you can still feel sad sometimes. You're still going to miss your loved one. Like, yeah, you're human. Like you said, it would be abnormal, like, if you did not have any feelings whatsoever in that regard.
Right. That's not the goal.
Yeah. But you don't have to carry around the pain.
Right.
It doesn't have to hurt so much. It doesn't have to feel so unresolved and so mixed up and just so, oh, heavy and all of that. Like, that part you can actually resolve, move through, kind of move beyond and let go, and then continue your life. And it also means then, because loss, unfortunately, loss continues to occur in life in various ways, but it means that when new losses do occur, it's not accumulating,
right.
And so it's not going to be resonating, you know, vibrating all those previous griefs, because it's like you uninstall those buttons within you. So they're not there to push anymore or to vibrate. They're, you know, you're kind of, it's released that, it's cleared that out, so that you can deal with whatever that loss is. You can deal with that loss.
Right.
And you have the tools to deal with that loss too. Right. And the understanding and hopefully the compassion for yourself to go, oh, yeah, this is grief. This is real. You don't invalidate it or minimize it. You're just like, yep, this is real grief. This is what I'm experiencing right now. Okay. That's what's happening. And I think that can be really helpful.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. And that's first I've heard about that grief kind of reverberating. And so I think that's a really good point to make with people. If you have grief, deal with it. You're going to have other losses. So you might as well deal with this one now, so you can deal with those, you know, individually.
Yeah.
Well, Jan, I want to really thank you for being on. I want to go over how people can contact you. So your website is alightintuition.com. Mm-hmm. So it's alight, L-I-G-H-T, intuition, I-N-T-U-I-T-I-O-N.com. And your book that you mentioned earlier was Signs from Spirit. And that's by Reverend Joanna Bartlett. That's available on Amazon and anywhere books are sold, right?
Yeah.
All right. Anything you wanted to add?
Oh, I don't know. It's been lovely. I love talking about the stuff. I'm, you know, weird in that I love talking about grief with people. I think partly because I know a way through it. And I'm always excited about helping other people, guiding other people through it, so that they can, you know, they don't have to limit their capacity for happiness in their life. You know, we exist with grief and joy and the fullness of the human experience, and it can be hard and overwhelming, but you know, it can also be pretty wonderful. And I encourage people to trust themselves, right? So whether that is feeling like you are hearing from a loved one in spirit, trust that. It's not going to hurt anything to trust it, right? If it makes your own heart happy, allow yourself that. Allow yourself that happiness. And the same that if you go, you know what? I think I'm ready to like learn how to move through this grief stuff. Trust that too. It's, you know, when it, I always tell people, it's whenever you're ready is the right time to do it. And, yeah. You know, that's when you should listen to yourself and move forward in that way. So it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. It's been great talking to you. This has been another episode of Grief to Growth, and this is your host, Brian Smith. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I am a life coach and grief partner. You can reach me at www.grieftogrowth.com. That's www.grief2growth.com. And if you'd like, you can book a free half-hour consultation. The other thing I'd like to ask for is your support for the podcast. If you could go to iTunes and leave a review, that would be wonderful. And if you'd like to support me financially, you can support me for as little as 99 cents per month. And you can find the link to do that in every episode. Hope you have a great day. Hey there, if you liked this episode, come on over and talk about it. Let me know what you liked. If you didn't like this episode, come on over and talk about it. Let me know what you didn't like. Go to grieftogrowth.com/community and look for Talk About the Podcast. I'll see you there.